The following is a paid program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation and WFED. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individuals or advertisers as indicated. WFED does not endorse or take responsibility for those statements or opinions. Federal News Radio accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracies or errors in admissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Deloitte's Fed Central program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Here's your host, Jay Norris.
Thanks so much for joining us today. And we're going to talk today about the changes that are going on Capitol Hill and what they mean for federal agencies. Joining us is someone with a lot of insight in this area, Tom Davis, who's the Director of Federal Government Affairs at Deloitte, a former member of Congress from the state of Virginia, and of course, he was chair of the House Government Reform Committee. Thanks for joining us, Tom. A pleasure to talk to you today.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. So behind the scenes, you obviously know what's unfolding. There's been a major change, a shift in the House of Representatives going from a Democratic majority now to a Republican majority. And of course, the big discussion will be about the president's budget that's about to be unveiled, the 2012 fiscal budget. And so what do you expect Congress, how do you expect them to react when the president delivers his budget next week?
Well, I think before you even get to his budget, you've got to look at the continuing resolution from last year. Congress left for the elections and came back and never passed a budget for FY11. The House next week is going to address the continuing resolution, which is currently funded at last year's amounts, and they're going to take a bite out of it. They're going to lower those numbers by, you know, $30 to $50 billion, and then send that over to the Senate. Which probably is not going to go along. So before you even get to next year's budget and spending, I think you've got to get through this year. A lot of agencies right now are nervous about what they're going to have to spend for the rest of this year. So I think the president's budget will be looked at up here and taken apart. It's a political document, I think, in the minds of many Republicans. But we can't take our eye off the ball, but most of these agencies don't have budgets for this year.
So when the agency has to put in place programs for, you know, for changes that might be taking place, are they able to do that with a continuing resolution? What do they do in the face of all these issues that they're facing?
Yeah. In a continuing resolution, you're not sure what your level of funding is going to be for the year. So what you see is on the part of the agencies, there's a lot of timidity about moving ahead with any follow-on contracts, new contracts, sometimes option years, because you're not sure if you start it, you're going to have the money to finish it off. And this year, it's even more pronounced because of the mutterings coming out of the new House of Representatives saying, we're not going to just extend the CR at last year's level. We're going to cut that level. Now, remember, the Senate has to agree and the president has to sign it. But what it probably means is that we're not going to have a resolution of this by March 4th. This will probably be kicked into April or May, which means that the funding that was supposed to start October 1 for the year, that the agencies were supposed to be able to proceed with their planning and programs, we're going to probably be into May before we get some kind of resolution at this. And at this point, there's a lot of uncertainty.
And do negotiations go on behind the scenes to try to reach a resolution between what the president's priorities are and what the Senate side wants to see? I mean, how do they resolve those differences?
Well, the president's budget is higher than the continuing resolution, and the House's action will be lower than the continuing resolution. So the president will sign or veto whatever they put on his desk. But I don't think he's going to have a huge role in the negotiation of this in the meantime. Not any negotiations taking place between the House and Senate on this current fiscal year. This is a train wreck waiting to happen. Sooner or later, hopefully cooler heads will prevail. We'll get a budget for the rest of this year, and then we can address the president's budget for next year. But at this point, the House and Senate, I think, are going to be at loggerheads, and the administration, I think, is going to be grateful for whatever they can get.
So let's talk about some specific agencies. Obviously, the Department of Defense has been discussed, greatly discussed. The Secretary, Secretary Gates, wants to see $100 billion cut out of their budget over a period of time. And, there's consternation because we're in the middle of a war in Afghanistan. There are priority items that really need to be funded. So how does Congress go about tackling the DOD budget and deciding where there should be spending and what should be curtailed?
Well, I think Secretary Gates has tried to take the bull by the horns. Instead of waiting for Congress to act, is trying to make the cuts within his own department and at the same time maintain the current troop levels that we have, which include deployments in Afghanistan and Iraq. He recognizes that to do that, he's going to have to cut parts of that budget to sustain and add in other parts of the budget. And he's trying, I think, his best to take control of that. What you have to remember about the defense budget is it's traditionally not DOD's budget, or the president's budget, it's Congress's budget. And Congress adds a lot of spending to the Department of Defense that the Defense Department doesn't ask for and really doesn't want. So I think the secretary trying to stay ahead of this curve and offer up cuts ahead of time, he's trying to be proactive and make sure that he can meet future deployment needs with the appropriate support. And that's going to mean cuts in some areas to add to others.
All right, so we have $78 billion projected. That's coming from the OMB director, Jacob Lew, over 5 years, $1 billion cut from IT alone. You know, this is just DOD spending now. So can they execute these kinds of cuts?
Yeah, I don't think they have any choice. The federal government is borrowing 40 cents for every dollar it spends last year and this year. We have a projected budget deficit this year of $1.5 trillion. This is just unsustainable, and everybody understands it. Now, the people who get into the weeds on this budget and the problems surrounding it understand that the bulk of the spending and the largest increases of spending aren't in defense, and they're not in discretionary spending at all. They're in Medicare and Medicaid, and then Social Security to some extent, because you have baby boomers retiring in record numbers every day. But you're going to see over the next 2 years an unwillingness of Congress to tackle these programs because they have such large political constituencies. So the focus is going to be on discretionary dollars. That doesn't solve the problem, but it probably lessens the impact of deficits, and it is able to wave the flag and show your political base that you're doing something about spending. But it doesn't really get to the problem. The problem really come in health care spending for in Medicare and Medicaid, pension costs, interest on the debt, which today is masked because interest rates are so artificially low, and of course Social Security, which now for the first time in recent history is paying out more every year than it takes in. So these are the budgetary problems, but Congress will probably do nothing on this the next 2 years, at least until the presidential election, even though that's where the money is, and instead we'll focus on discretionary spending. And I think non-defense discretionary spending will take the bulk of that hit.
And so there's a strong will in the Republican Party. I think they feel they were elected to really reduce spending, to reduce the deficit. Do they have the ability to do that? Do we have the ability to actually go in and try to execute some deficit reduction even at this juncture?
Well, they have the ability to try to do it and to pass bills in the House, but to become law, you need the Senate to go along with it, and there are 53 Democrats or independents who vote with Democrats in the organization in the Senate, and you need 60 votes to pass anything. So it's unlikely the Senate is going to go along with what the House wants. Traditionally, what happens is that the Senate will pass a version and the House will pass a version, and then you go to conference and try to hammer out the details with the members in the committees of jurisdiction trying to hammer that out. That this year has a couple of added elements of difficulty. Number one is at about the time this is coming to fruition and should be resolved, you have the debt ceiling bill where they're asking Congress to extend the debt ceiling. And that has its own set of problems because members of Congress are going to be reluctant to extend the debt ceiling without getting some concessions on overall spending. In addition to that, I think there is a recognition now that we've got to show some reductions in spending just because the deficit's getting out of hand. And so that will drive this in a way that we traditionally haven't seen.
And so what does that mean for, you know, the president's stated mission to try to reorganize government agencies? He talked about it in the State of the Union address. He wants to try to create, more streamlined agencies that have one function rather than have, one function spread out right over several agencies. Is that doable in this climate?
Well, it's I think reorganizations that save money and make for better efficiencies are doable under any climate. What he's going to have to do, though, is to sit down and work with the Republicans in the House and the Democrats in the Senate to try to make it come about. And that's going to take a lot of work and a lot of ambassadorial duties to key members of Congress to convince them this is going to save money. Ultimately, the American people weigh in on these issues. And once they've weighed it in, it tends to move the political body. I just add one other element to this. We talk about raising the debt ceiling. If the debt ceiling is not raised, people can't get paid. Not only can't bondholders get paid off, but federal employees can't get paid. Contractors can't get paid. Pension checks can't go out. It freezes the amount of money that the government can spend at a certain level, and you move into a default proposition. Nobody wants this to happen. But we have to remember that when President Obama was a member of the United States Senate, he voted against raising the debt ceiling when President Bush was president. So I think at this point, everybody is leery of what happens if you don't raise the debt ceiling, but the Republicans are going to ask for some major concessions before they vote to raise the debt ceiling, and that's going to probably mean some significant reductions in discretionary spending.
We're talking to Tom Davis, Director of Federal Government Affairs at Deloitte. Of course, he, a former member of Congress from the state of Virginia and the chair of the House Government Reform Committee, knows a lot about these budgetary machinations. So we'll come back and we'll talk about some specific items that the president's administration wants to put into effect, the OMB 25-point plan, and what it will mean in the midst of all these budget negotiations. So we'll do that when we return. Stay tuned. This is Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jane Norris.
Workplace flexibility has long been equated with employee satisfaction. However, flexibility also directly impacts budget by lowering real estate and energy costs and improving productivity. How can organizations strive to deliver higher levels of performance with less in today's changing world of work? Join Deloitte as they examine ways to create a great place to serve that enables and empowers government employees to do their best work every day on Tuesday, February 22nd at 2 p.m. To register, go to deloitte.com/us/debriefs.
We're back. This is Deloitte's Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jane Norris. We're talking today to Tom Davis, Director of Federal Government Affairs at Deloitte, former member of Congress from Virginia and chair of the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee. And Tom, we were talking about the president's priorities and the budget in the earlier part of the program. Now I want to talk specifically about some plans that have been laid out by the Office of Management and Budget. They put out a 25-point plan, a framework to reform IT management last year. And so this is obviously something they think will save the government money in the long run and also modernize government so that it's more compatible, able to talk to itself over agencies. So what about this? I mean, it costs money to save money in the long run.
Right.
How do you implement programs like that in the face of these budget pressures?
Well, that's always a difficulty. You have to make the case that you have to spend money to save money. I think the plan is a good plan, but the difficulty we always have in government is the plan somehow, by the time they are implemented, the savings don't materialize. You have to move quickly in a case like that, and you have to be able to move and implement them, which means getting them funded in a timely manner. There is a propensity sometimes in government that when a new plan comes out, and every administration's got their plans for people down below in the bureaucracy to kind of wait them out. They're comfortable with the way things are. They don't want to make changes. They say, why don't you just patch what I have? I don't need a whole new system and the like. So it's a good plan, but implementing it is traditionally been very, very difficult. I wish them all the best. They're going to need this kind of reorganization and planning if they're going to save the kind of dollars over the long term. We could also see some cuts in programs, but I think you start with making the current government we have more efficient. And I think this plan is a good step in the right direction.
So in the plan, there's a blueprint for budget flexibility. So this would give program managers managers, you know, the ability to plan over time rather than have a year-to-year budget. Is there some resistance to Congress in turning over that kind of flexibility to agencies?
Of course there is. Congress likes to control the budget. They like to do it on an annual basis. I think one of the weaknesses in government sometimes is we don't recognize that our greatest asset is our employee base, that we have a lot of good people who come into government to serve for the right reasons and to make a difference, and yet we put the reins on them. We don't allow them to innovate. We don't allow them to use their discretion. We tend to all go from the same book in terms of this is how you're going to operate and kind of straitjacket them, and it's not a very good way to run a business, and it's a terrible way to run a government. Having said that, you know, we have high hopes in this case that the administration will be able to make their arguments to Congress, but the problems aren't Republican Democrat here. It's just the usual inertia you have of people not wanting to make changes, and if you try to make a change, wanting more information and more information, and kind of waiting the thing out and slow rolling it.
So when you talk about the need to modernize, and I think part of this OMB 25-point plan is really the ability to have more social networking, move to the cloud, which will allow more sharing of information between agencies in a very efficient way, you know, that really does attract younger workers, and it allows the government to say, you know, we're technologically up to date, we have all the latest mechanisms to make U.S. success. Does it really hurt them in terms of recruiting not to have those kind of mechanisms in place?
Well, I think there are other things that hurt recruiting worse. I mean, it's a pretty long period of time sometimes it takes once the government's made an offer to be able to get somebody on board, in some cases to go through background checks, in cases of key personnel getting them through Senate confirmation. It just, you know, it's a very burdensome process that I think we lose a lot of good people because of that. But more importantly, once they come into government, then we act like they're just a line in the budget. Let's say, well, you're going to freeze your salary. We're going to freeze positions. People lose sight of the fact that their career opportunities are almost stymied. It's right now not a great place to attract the talented workers. And yet, if you want to get the job done for less money, you need to attract the best and the brightest. You need to pay them decently and let them deliver. Let them innovate. Let them use the skills that they have to be able to get the job done, and don't straitjacket them. We have one other issue with that, Jane, and that is we tend to still be pretty stovepiped, pretty turf-oriented, pretty jurisdiction-oriented in terms of the way that government agencies carry out their duties. There's just not as much collaboration as we would like, and that stymies government sometimes in getting the job done. And I think the administration here is trying to break across these lines, but they've been there. These barriers have been there for a long time, and it could be very, very difficult. I wish the administration the best of luck. I think they're on the right track with what they're trying to do here.
With the move to the cloud, I know that's something that they're asking agencies to do pretty quickly. They're asking them to move a certain percentage of their operations into the cloud, I think, to encourage that kind of collaboration. Do you see that being successful?
I wish them the best of luck. They're heavily invested in this. But with budgets as tight as they are, this takes money to do that. With funds basically being cut, you're going to have to take away from other areas to make these kind of things happen. It's going to force some difficult decisions in some of these agencies to make this happen on time.
All right. So let's move on to health care reform, another, I think, area where there's a lot of debate and discussion. The Republicans in Congress are looking at ways to try to defund some of the program. I think the administration is moving full speed ahead with implementation. So where does that stand, and how do you see that developing up?
Well, I think health care will be a major battleground issue for the 2012 election, and I don't think either side is going to cede any territory to the other in the debate. What we have to remember about the health care bill is it's a very imperfect bill. Traditionally, when you pass a bill in one body, and the other body passes a different bill, which was what happened here, you go to a conference, you get your best policy people together, you fix it, you connect the parts, and you make the bill run. In this particular case, the Senate was never able to get the bill to conference with the House. So they were stuck with an imperfect Senate bill that was designed to have a low CBO, Congressional Budget Office score, and it was designed to pick up 60 votes. And that's why you have the Cornhusker kickback and what they call the Louisiana Purchase, the Gator Aid, the legislation that gave states particular advantages over other states to gain the votes of senators from that state who were casting what were otherwise difficult votes to cast. Well, they never got to fix these in the conference and connect the dots. It has some reporting periods and some other things in there that are just not likely to occur in a timely way. And now they're faced with a Republican Congress that is not going to give them the funding to get this done. They have a vested interest in having this bill fail. So it's going to be, I think, a battleground over the next 2 years. It's going to be more rhetorical than anything else. And they're going to try to, Republicans will try to starve this bill and not give it the money that needs to be fully implemented and slow it down. And under the premise that if they take power in 2012, they can repeal the bill and put their own bill in and try to address some of these issues. So it's a battleground. It's for political junkies, it's fascinating to watch this. But right now, the bill is law. It's not going to get repealed despite the House vote because the Senate would have to go along and the president would have to sign a repeal, and it's just not going to happen.
And so there are parts of it that Health and Human Services is already writing regulation for, already implementing.
They have to. It's the law of the land. They have no choice but to proceed in this way. And what they may find, I think you'll certainly see this in the House next week when the House passes the continuing resolution for Health and Human Services, is that some of that money will be taken away from the agency in the House version. Now, remember, it still has to go to the Senate. You need the president to sign it. A president can't add money, but he can certainly weigh in at this point. And so I think we have a long way to go to see how this plays out. But it's clear that the health care bill is going to be one of the front and center issues of the 2012 campaign. And each side is doing their best to fulfill their role. In the Democratic case, it's implementing it. In the Republican case, it's stopping it.
And so finally, let me ask you, if you were to look in your crystal ball, what would you predict for this next year? Obviously, there are big differences in the way that the White House, the administration, the Democrats in the Senate and the Republicans in the House see this budget. So how will it manifest in the end?
Well, I think you have to remember, first of all, that the Senate, just take a look at the Senate. The House is going to act. The Republicans control the House. They're going to be able to pass whatever they need to pass. So the leadership wants something passed in the House. Majority rule in the House, they're going to be able to move it through pretty quickly. And they have a pretty conservative membership to be able to do that. They can lose 20 members on a vote, and they will still have enough votes to pass it in the House. And I think in some cases they'll pick up some Democrats. The question is, what will the Senate do? And the Senate right now has 53 either Democratic leading independents or Democrats and 47 Republicans. But in all of these issues, it's going to take 60 votes to pass anything, which means there are going to have to be some compromises. The problem for the Democrats is, as you look at the Republicans, you'll need to pick up 7 Republicans. Assuming you hold all of your Democrats together, you're taking a look at Republicans, I think, who saw what happened to Bob Bennett, Lisa Murkowski, Mike Castle, Republicans who compromised and worked with the Democrats in the last Congress. They were rewarded with primary defeats. And it's the political disincentive for Republicans to work along bipartisan lines diminishes. Now, you only need 7, and a lot of Republicans won't be up for reelection in 2 years and may feel some flexibility to go along if they think it, to go along with the Democrats if they think it's in the national interest. But it's tough. And some of the other things the administration may want, they have some Democrats up for reelection that may not want to be identified. So Harry Reid has a tough job being the majority leader under these circumstances, and particularly on these spending bills, which go to the heart of the political base of each party. Tough to reach compromise, but they know that if they don't, you ultimately end up with a government shutdown and nobody wants that. So it's going to be interesting to watch at this point.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Tom Davis, Director of Federal Government Affairs at Deloitte and former member of Congress from the state of Virginia. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us. This has been Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM with Jane Norris, your host. Make sure to tune in 2 weeks for another edition of Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and fednewsradio.com/FedCentral.